We've been talking as if we're about to have a big water crisis, and we're not. We plan water in Arizona on a very long timeline. There has been a lot of long-term planning and preparation for drought, preparation for shortage. Most cities have diverse water portfolios, and so they have made plans to stay resilient in that. What do you think is the largest irrigated crop in the U.S.?
People.
That's pretty good. The answer is lawns. We grow a lot of grass. Water flows toward money, doesn't it? A really great website called ArizonaWaterFacts.com. Our state, compared with the mid-50s, we went from 1 million people to 7 million people. Our economy has grown 20 times what it was in the mid-50s, and yet we're using slightly less water than we were then.
That was Sarah Porter. Again, I guess that was all audio that came from this program. She was actually on with Stephanie Smallhouse, who was the intro you heard coming into the second segment. And when you talk about water crisis, just, you know, be thankful you're not Cape Town, South Africa, where water is being rationed to 13 gallons per day per person. Imagine that, 13 gallons. They say the average person in the U.S. uses 82 gallons. So just imagine your water use being a quarter of what you're allowed. And Arizona is not the only place that has water. You know, the article here from the Wall Street Journal talking about the Florida-Georgia conflict that's battling out over there. And just be thankful you're in Arizona, because our water laws and our water history, you know, is so in depth, where over in Florida-Georgia, they never thought it would be a problem. So there's arguments there about who can pump where and underground what, and what water belongs to Georgia and Florida. And it's leaving farmers like this guy in a very dry, a very Arizona-looking pivot field where he used to have his peanuts. And 40 million people, this article came from KTAR, about a $5 billion agricultural industry. Those numbers don't quite add up when we're talking about everything we cover here at Rosie on the House. So our big picture that we want to give you is, yes, we're in a drought, but it's not necessarily we're not at a doomsday scenario. And what we've been able to accomplish has been very impressive over the past. And where we can go in the future is even more exciting. The Alfalfa Project. Julie, have you heard of it?
I really haven't.
So I've been following this for about 4 years, and it goes to Chelsea's. When you hear the numbers, you're like, why doesn't everybody jump to this? Well, your infrastructure cost is significant. But instead of, like some of former Arizona governors running around saying, we need to pay people not to farm, and if we could cut back 10% of our farming, that'll solve all of our water needs. Well, okay, are you going to stop eating 10% of what you're currently eating? No.
You just can't do that.
So now your food costs are going up because it's importing from somewhere else.
Right.
Why not look to technology? Enter the Alfalfa Project. This doesn't have a direct effect on Arizona yet, because this is actually in the San Joaquin Valley. So it is above where water is drawn out of Colorado River for California. They actually have two places they pump out, and so does Arizona. We don't have just the CAP. But the Alfalfa Project is a way of converting alfalfa irrigated farms to sub-drip irrigation. So we're not just talking surface drip. This is sub-drip irrigation. And if they're able to accomplish on a large scale what they've been able to do on 2,000 acres, which is cut the water consumption from 5 acre-feet of water per ton of alfalfa to 2.4 acre-feet of water per ton of alfalfa, they will save a so their goal is to convert 235,000 acres of alfalfa to this system. And if they're able to do that, that's going to save almost 100 million acre-feet of water annually.
So now that you say that, yes, and most of that I think is taking place in the Harquahala Valley, and I just never called it the Alfalfa Project. A lot of those alfalfa fields already are being done by subsurface drip irrigation.
So if just in the San Joaquin Valley, 230,000 acres there, they're able to save a million acre-feet.
So that's in California. Yeah. Okay.
Imagine what that can do not only in Harquahala and in Yuma and in Arizona, but a lot of the water out of the Colorado River is going out of is going into the Imperial Valley of California to grow alfalfa. So if we can do a million acre feet up there, just imagine what we can do down here with probably – we probably have more acres than 230,000 between Arizona and California growing alfalfa off of Colorado River water that we can convert to that. So instead of paying to not farm, why don't we look at
technology, which is what we've been talking about. And there is up in more northern, northeastern Arizona, some of that stuff is already, or conversions are already taking place. But one of the other technologies that I really wanted Chelsea to address was the flood irrigation. Because of my dad's own example of laser leveling, and then once all his fields were laser leveled, I like to say tabletop smoothness with a slight slant. One of my farmers said, well, I don't know if this is that smooth, but it's very smooth, and that technology then allows them to do the basin irrigation. But why, you know, when you hear flood irrigation, Chelsea, everybody thinks, and it is huge volumes of water, but why is this so important?
And one more point on the alfalfa before we jump to that.
Yeah.
Is, so why alfalfa? What's the significance of alfalfa?
I'm glad you asked that question. Yes. For sure. Because I think that and flood irrigation, I hear a lot of the same narrative all the time. Why in the world are we growing alfalfa in the desert? Why in the world are we just pouring a bunch of water on a field and letting it sit there? How does this make any sense? And that all plays together, actually. So let's look at Pinal County for an example. We're being a little biased toward that county right now.
Yes, we love Pinal County.
That's okay. Pinal County is about a $2.3 billion agricultural industry in that county. And the multiplier effects of that are significant because a lot of them deal with food processing. There's quite a bit of food processing in that county, and a lot of it's dairy processing. The reason that's possible is because there are quite a few dairy farms, a lot of volume of milk in Pinal County that's close to that processing.
Right.
Makes it efficient, it makes it effective that you're not shipping that raw product super far distances, you're saving on fuel, all that stuff. Now, to have that milk supply close, it makes sense to have the feed supply for that milk close. And a lot of that feed supply is through alfalfa. And so when you're a consumer and you go into the grocery store and you know that that milk in front of you, whether it's a store brand or a name brand, probably 85% of the time came from Arizona cows and was actually in that cow about 72 hours before you're picking it up off the shelf, that's only possible because we have this intertwined infrastructure of the feed source is close to the cow is close to the processing is close to the store.
And those cows are eating Arizona locally grown alfalfa.
That's right.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons. But the other reason is that alfalfa grows extremely well here. When we can say we get 8, 9, 10 cuttings of alfalfa, which means we can harvest that field 8, 9, 10 times in a season. When I'm going to talk to my friends in other Western states and even in the Midwest, they're happy if they get 3, if they get 4. So that means that for every drop of water we're using, we're getting exponentially more product for that drop of water. And so that efficiency is really key and isn't possible in states or places that don't have the climate that Arizona has.
So why is the flood irrigation, though, so important then with all of this?
And one more thing that I know you want to get there. One more point.
I really do.
He's forcing the point.
We're missing the point.
One more thing.
Not just feed for dairy cattle, but it's feed for a lot of your livestock.
Oh, yeah.
And when you grew up, you know, you were taught about all the different things Indians used buffaloes for. You know, the bones they were making tools and, you know, the bladders they were using for canteens. And, you know, they were very...
Nothing is wasted.
Nothing's wasted. Well, that hasn't changed. And in fact, we're even more efficient with our animal byproducts than the Native Americans were. 50% of an animal is just food and dairy. The other 50% goes into a lot of things.
Yep,
you
know,
when you think about all your leather products, cosmetics...
Gummy bears.
Glues... adhesives.
Crayons.
We don't waste any part of the animal. And even if it's composting it to fertilize, to grow more feed, to feed the animals, it's a complete cycle. So you couldn't just say, well, eat less beef and go vegan. Well,
and quit the alfalfa. You can't.
You can't because the amount, everything in your life I was looking for the actual term. There is a profession that will come out and educate you on how everything you have in use is somehow tied back to an animal byproduct.
Yeah, we've been sharing those on Facebook too.
That's right. And so, and even, you know, talking about moving towards more plant-based types of diets and systems, the fertilizer for that has to come from somewhere too, right? It's kind of a, I wouldn't say a closed loop, but it is definitely an integral, and you can't separate one segment of agriculture from another. You really can't.
So do I have permission to ask about the flood now?
Go to your laser leveling.
Go for it, Chelsea.
All right. So flood irrigation. Why do we use it? Doesn't it just waste a bunch of water because you're throwing it out on the field and then it evaporates and then it runs down the field, it runs into the street? Absolutely not. Flood irrigation, all of these technologies we've talked about, drip and sprinkler, the reason they work so well is because of the precision, right? You can get the water where you want it to go, when you want it to go there. And our farmers have developed ways to make flood irrigation just as precise as those other technologies on the soils and on the topographies where it makes sense for that to happen. So Julie talked about laser leveling. That's kind of step one. You level that field to the exact slope that you need it to go to get the water from one end of the field where your ditch is to the other end of the field where it ends. So you're using GPS to do that. You're using lasers on the back of your tractors to do that, which is a very Star Wars type of statement to make, I'm now realizing. And so you're doing that extremely precise and exactly where you want it to go. Then in some other parts of the state, especially out in the West Valley where I live, there are these things called tailwater pump back systems. So that means when you have a field and that slope creates a situation where the water is kind of pooling at the bottom of the field, they actually have pump back systems where they're pumping that water back to the top so that water is not being wasted. It's not running off into somewhere they don't want it to go. They're putting it back into their crop and back into their water delivery systems.
So in certain instances with certain crops, you really need that high volume of water and you need it to get out quickly. And so that's why we have these systems.
That's exactly
and
right.
Nothing is wasted. And the reason we can't afford to waste our water is because there's a cost involved. And some of those costs are very high.
Yeah, they can either be financial costs or even human and ecological costs too. And one of those ecological costs of these technologies, and we talked about it earlier, is the salt issue. Arizona has very salty soils. All you got to do is go out with a shovel in your backyard and dig about a foot down to realize that. And when we don't have that volume of water that's leaching that salt down and pushing that salt down, we can run into some real soil quality issues that make it impossible or unfeasible to grow plants in that area as well. And so all of these things kind of work into that closed system too. When you're leaching that water down into the soil, those salts down into the soil, that water's going to go somewhere and that's going to replenish our aquifers. It's going back into the ground, into that closed loop. So there are a lot of good reasons to use flood, and there are also a lot of good reasons not to say that it's wasteful. Did talk to one of our farmers out in the West Valley about that argument, right? There's evaporation. You're just letting water sit on the field. And he put it into perspective for me. He said, look, when we're at the peak of our alfalfa production, on average, our alfalfa fields will have water on them 8 hours out of the month. That's how often we're irrigating. There's 8 hours of water standing in that field for a month. What does your swimming pool look like?
There you go.
I said, oh. Yeah, that really does put it into perspective. So when we're talking about wastefulness, I think flood irrigation gets maligned way more often than it should.